AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. New contract highs in old crop corn. Beans were 20-plus cents higher. And wheat ended the day with solid gains. March cotton got back Friday's losses. Optimism flooded back into hogs. And April cattle closed below session highs, but it was a new high and a new high close. Man, not a bad start to the week.
Live from deep inside the broadcast igloo via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research. And right after the news, Jack Scova from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. I didn't know if you would have the gumption to actually go out and build the broadcast igloo, but I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Well, you got to. I've got all this seal blubber, you know, that I'd collected over the summer and nothing to do with. I mean, you know, you might as well put it to work. This is what it's here for. This is what we've been working toward.
I gotcha. I didn't realize that seal blubber was a was such an important piece of the construction of an igloo.
Well, it really isn't. But, you know, one of the things with winter survival is is keeping yourself nourished properly, right? You don't need seal blubber
bring
for that
the
in the summertime, but let's bring on the energy, you know? Let's lay on some blubber. Why not?
You know what? I'm with you. Slice me off a piece of that, and let's get this thing going.
You know what you do? You melt it up, and then you drizzle it over cornbread. Now you got something going.
Oh, man. Wow. Wow. Now you're talking.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yes, and good stuff for the start to the way to the week with the way that these markets closed today. Really impressive. Got some upside momentum going. Big report coming tomorrow. We're going to get the download on that from Jerry Goodell, and we'll get you ready for it. Now, if you've got any questions about what to expect, what not to expect in the report, give us a holler, 855-4-TALK-AG, 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. And when you do, include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I will be sure to see it. All right, man. All right. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, March soft red winter wheat futures built on Friday's upside recovery with a slightly higher open and a solidly higher close. The low range open, high range close points to a test of resistance at the February high of 671. Wheat export inspections in the weekend at February 4 totaled to just over 441,000 metric tons. That lined up with pre-report trade expectations. Frigid cold temperatures over U.S. winter wheat country and Russia's plans to tax wheat exports added support to prices. July hard red winter wheat 13.5 cents higher, 644.75. July soft red gained 11 cents, 643. September spring wheat 8.25 cents higher, 658.5. Chip.
Yeah, wheat was a reluctant follower to the upside in the overnight session, but the upside momentum just continued to build throughout the day, and I think that's going to help that market out when we reopen this evening.
Corn export inspections in the weekend at February 4 of nearly 1.577 million metric tons topped pre-report trade expectations. While that helped support prices, traders generally agree that chart-based buying and a lack of selling interest ahead of tomorrow's supply and demand update from USDA cleared the path to the upside. March corn futures accelerated the rally on the push through last week's contract high of 558. The ability of the front month contract to close above that resistance suggests the market is recommitted to slowing the demand pace. March corn futures 15.25 cents higher, 563.75. May corn up 14.5, 562. December corn closed at 458.25, up 6.5 cents. And Chip, on both the wheat and the corn, the far deferred months, the new crop contracts, they killed the music.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the deal there?
You know, last week the bear spreads really worked and worked hard. Now this week, to start things off, we're just a little bit of a correction in the spread. We got the report coming tomorrow, so I think it's more of a correction than anything else, Davis. I wouldn't read too much into the spread action today.
I can live with that. Export inspections of soybeans totaled just over 1.8 million metric tons. That lined up with trade expectations. March beans opened slightly higher, then slipped to test support at Friday's low. When sellers could not generate downside momentum, they basically packed up operations for the day. The lack of selling interest allowed March futures to push through and close above resistance at Friday's high. The upside reversal after last week's consolidation points the market to a test of resistance at 1395 in the near term. March bean futures 21 cents higher, 1387 and three quarters. May beans jumped 20 and one quarter to 1386. November bean futures 1179 and three quarters, up 18 and three quarter cents. Chip.
All right. Well, when you throw together the 1.577 million metric ton of corn export inspections and the beans at 1.8 million, you get to 2.4 million. That's a number that I want to watch here over the next couple of weeks and see if we can get above that, because bean export inspections right about as expected, corn export inspections above trade expectations. Maybe that 2.4 number is kind of a barrier. Can we get above that in the weeks ahead?
March cotton futures had a 203-point trading range today, Chip, and still posted an inside trading day. With a low range open and a high range close, the contract high close will help the market build upside momentum. March cotton 154 points higher, 84.28, and December cotton surged 148 to 82.12.
All right. Hey, you know what? Let's take a look at the livestock when we come back for the start of the next segment.
Roger,
because I want to get Jack. All right. I want to get Jack Scoville in here, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, doing great. Beautiful day today.
Is it? Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So, okay, we've got this report coming up tomorrow, Jack. It's normally such a report. A lot of traders rarely even pay attention to it. This one, doggone it, we better pay attention, don't you think?
Well, yeah, we're looking for increased demand. Of course, we just heard why here with the export inspections, but we're looking for increased demand on both the soybeans and the corn and a cut and ending stacks. Sizable minority out there thinking that USDA probably won't do anything because this is such a meh report, but a lot of people looking for those cuts to be made, and given the prices where they're at, we got to hope that that's going to happen. On the other hand, though, even if they don't do anything, it's kind of hard to believe that our ending stocks aren't, in fact, getting real tight and that the situation isn't real tight out there, so downside might not be that great. We might get a little bit, but probably not a whole lot.
Gotcha. The other thing that we always look at in the February update is if USDA makes any changes to the South American production estimates. Jack, I don't think there's much expectations of big changes there either, is there?
No, I don't think so. They're starting to harvest now, and I think USDA is probably going to monitor the harvest before they make any big changes now. They might as well. And if they were going to make any big changes because of the previous weather, they would have done it already. So yeah. I think they're going to wait for the harvest.
Yep. Still got upside momentum in these markets, Jack?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You bet. I love it. So I think we do.
Excellent. Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great.
All right, that's Jack Scoville, the Price Futures Group. Let's dig into some of the numbers in the supply and demand balance sheet with Jack's buddy, Jerry Goodell from Midland Research, coming up here next on AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gum, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Delaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Delaro Complete from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jim Flory. We're going to have a conversation with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research here in just a moment. But first, Davis, if we could.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's go through how the livestock market's closed.
Well, Chip, live cattle futures tried to push higher early in the session, but fell back to close slightly lower. February live cattle were 15 cents lower at 116.57 1/2. April cattle gained 17.5 cents to 123.95. March feeders pressured by gains in corn futures, 82.5 cents lower today, 137.45. And on the snout side, the outlook for U.S. pork exports in 2021 is rebuilding as China once again deals with widespread disease in the hog herd. February lean hogs, $1.20 higher, 72.17 1/2, and April hogs gained 35 cents to close at 80.65. Chip.
Yeah, if you want a little bit more on the spread of those diseases in China, give a listen to this morning's hour of AgriTalk. We had Norman Besek on their VP International Marketing for the National Pork Board, but Brett Stewart, economist and founding partner at Global AgriTrends, was on and had some insights on that. It just sounds like, I know it's a constant battle. It's a constant battle here to keep disease out of the hog house. I get that. But at least we've got some success, Davis. I don't know if the Chinese are having much success after that conversation with Brett this morning.
Yeah, and the way that there was all the talk about reshaping the whole industry over there, if that's what they've done, and they're still probably still in the process of doing that, but
sure.
I mean, if diseases are still flaring up, man, you just rebuilt your entire industry to no effect, apparently.
Right, right, right. And they're trying to figure out how to bring everything inside and under a roof. It's going to take some experiments and adjustments for environment and everything, but boy, they're having a tough time of it right now. I don't know what that means for our China's corn demand deeper into this year. It might take a bite out of that, but it ought to keep their pork demand really strong. Okay, Let's have a conversation right now. Jerry Goodell, Midland Research. How you doing, Jerry?
Well, it's good to talk there, Chip.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you again. Before we look forward to tomorrow's supply and demand report, it's been a while. I think it was November the last time you were on, Jerry. What do you make of the changes that we've gone through on these balance sheets for corn and soybeans? Just kind of give me your general impression on the way the markets have traded. What's it got you thinking as far as pricing attitudes going forward?
Well, yeah, as we say, November we had this kind of a standstill type of I'll take that back. We had a slight decline in both yields that month. We hadn't done much in October from there. And then, of course, the combination of consolidation or further analysis, if you like to say, of the last year's corn crop, where we've got a huge 5.9 feed number, which doesn't make any sense. And that we did get our stocks number back down because we had such poor quality crop last year, so we finally figured out that was getting the in right, but we still haven't figured out the yield. Let's don't get into that conversation.
Wow.
But going forward from there, what dynamics we've had here on the corn yield situation. Yeah. That now I think the one thing that's kind of tough for the USDA to come up with is the fact that we probably harvested 50%, maybe 45% of this crop when the moisture of going into the elevator was at 13-12%,
yeah,
stuff like that. That's kind of how that three bushel number finally showed up here at the end of the year, that further decline.
I got gotcha.
Down to that we were going to go slipping from the 176 number or 77 number downward, but we weren't going to end up having that much of an impact if we had a normal kind of fall harvest on
right.
getting it in the bin moisture-wise. So that was the kicker in this thing that added to the real enthusiasm that's come along here. Combination of that number taking the supplies down and also the fact that China, kind of interesting to have them show up this time of year at this price point. That makes you feel a little scary, relatively speaking. Do they know something about
exactly.
that we don't know? Maybe they know La Nina is going to kick our butt next spring.
Is it that, or do they know something about the Brazilian corn crop situation? You know, it raises all kinds of questions about why they're doing what they're doing. Now, I shouldn't say that. I think we've got a pretty good handle on why they're buying. Their stocks got too low. They've got that hog herd rebuild going that we talked about a little bit ago. But why now? Why decide that now is the time to step in and come with the biggest 1 week of U.S. corn purchases ever? It left me scratching my head, Jerry.
Oh, no doubt. I think most of us did, seeing that kind of jump in, or that approach to the market. I think the one thing that, as we talked about in hog operations, you just was talking about, is the fact that they've figured out that they have to have a higher quality of corn. Their reserve corn just was not going to be able to be put through the confinement systems that they're trying to go to. And at this point, they're still struggling, it looks like, to get there. But at the same time, I think that's a key feature why we might have had them decided it was time to get some of that in, maybe be able to utilize what they have and get things going. But now all of a sudden this disease issue popping back up, who knows, it might double clutch here. We'll have to see. Soybean side of this thing, to some extent, the stocks and the ending carryover stocks and the crop size, there's still a lot of things to be decided in there, in my opinion. We won't get too deep into that. But in general here, the last year's dryness, that insidious, kind of the classic July 4th until October, that kind of came through. We had one or two decent rains in different spots, but in general, that thing snuck in here and really clobbered us more than we ever expected. But I think the key thing is, hopefully the USDA, when they come to their census here in a couple of weeks, will not be using the 180 and the 52 bushel yield to start the yield out, we've got to get that idea of where we're starting each year at a better starting point, in my opinion.
Boy, I don't know, Jerry. I think you might be asking for too much to get them to come
on. Well, at this point, we've been talking about in the 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I know it, but you're talking about for the for the annual Ag Outlook Forum at USDA, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think you might be asking for too much to get him to come off of that 180. But you know what? It's a new guy. There's a different guy in charge now from when those numbers were put in place. So who knows? Who knows? Seth Myers might decide, you know, it's time to change things up.
It'll be interesting, to say the least. I think that's one of the biggest things we've had problems with in the USDA is we've started our ideas, and then we get the crop conditions and a few things like that. All of a sudden, we get way out there on the top of the world, and then it's so hard to get there. We haven't been above 176.6 since 17.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So how in the world are we projecting 5 bushels better here if we haven't been in above that level? That's some of the aggravating. Beans, we're creeping up, but we're missing our opportunity here. We got lots of things to talk about here for tomorrow's report too.
So. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we've got a little bit of time here. Let's go ahead and cover that export number on the 2020-21 corn balance sheet, because you've got a big number in there.
Oh, I do. When the things were flying, everybody was talking about the number being up 350, 400. You know, there was some of that number flying around out there because of the – and the jump was totally, by the way, was about $290 million on that. I'm using 2.8 on that number, which is 250 up. I'm also kind of tweaking the imports up by 25. You turn around – you stare at the other ones, the feed usage, they shouldn't be changing that with no stocks report. The ethanol demand number, it's going along. I don't think there's situations where we hope it's going to be better this summer and that, but I don't think they're going to make that change right here. So, and I'm at 1.325, and I'm about, maybe you want to say I'm 50 million under the average guess, but I think today's performance right here in the markets probably thinks that there's a lot of people in the actual business of agriculture that thinks it's lower than 1.3.
Yeah. Yeah. And that gives you a stocks to use ratio of 8.9%. It's awfully hard to work up the courage to take on a big short position in this corn market with a stocks to use ratio of 8.9%. We'll talk more about that with Jerry Goodell. Jerry's with Midland Research. We're getting ready for tomorrow's USDA supply and demand reports here on AgriTalk. Hey everybody, Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel, it's all online. And I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Limited winter kill is expected from the bitterly cold temps in the U.S. and Canada. Ukrainian wheat export prices slide as Russian exporters rush to beat the start of the export tariffs on that Russian wheat. Russian wheat exports up 21% in 2020 from 2019. House Democrats say they plan to pass the stimulus package by late February. Davis is looking forward on reporting to that to the very last moment. Senior Democrats to unveil a new $3,000 per child benefit as Biden stimulus gains steam. Minimum wage hike is likely to be split from COVID aid. Biden has called for a $15 an hour federal minimum wage, and Biden predicts extreme competition with China in the years ahead. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
A Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
KC and the Sunshine Band encouraging a little farm kid making, huh? Too cold to go outside? Good! Huh? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Make farm kids tonight.
I don't even know what to say.
Make farm kids tonight.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Sir.
We're talking to Jerry Goodell. Before we get back to Jerry, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 13.5 cents higher, 644.75. July soft red gained 11 cents to 643. March corn futures were 15.25 cents higher at 563.75. Just 563. Man, when's the last time I said that number connected to a March corn futures contract? May corn
probably
up 14.5. 562 on the May. March bean futures 21 cents higher, 13.87¾. May beans up 20¼, 13.86. March cotton, look out, 154 higher, 84.28. February live cattle 15 cents lower, 116.57¼. March feeders 82.5 cents lower, 137.45 today. And February lean hogs $1.20 higher, 72.17¼. That's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Jerry Goodell, Midland Research, is our guest today. Jerry, at the end of the last segment, I said something about that 8.9% stocks-to-use ratio that you've got projected out there for the 2020-21 marketing year on corn. It's tough to get on the sell side of the market when it's that tight, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's a scenario of the biggest thing is that to some extent, on the corn side of this thing, at least I think most of us that looked at this, the recent buying speed, we're not anticipating another surge of something like that coming at us here in the near term. We're going to have things improving in South America's harvest progress. Now, I know they're behind now, but they're going to be improving. So, you know, from the standpoint of that number is going to be quite interesting, as you were talking about here in inspections and how is it going to go out of here and all that kind of stuff. That is really the thing that's going to keep this corn market being able to see if it's going to have to go higher than the psychology here, it looks like, of the 580, $6 values out here. And that's going to all depend a little on how we get our spring together and how they get to the South American Safrina corn being planted. That's the magic of how much more enthusiasm we're going to have in the corn market. It's kind of that mix of gobbledygook.
Yeah. Yeah. If somehow, some way we would happen to lose another 300 million bushels of supply from the marketing year with a Safrina crop that comes up a bit short, yeah, that turns into something a bit, quite a bit more explosive. I agree. Let's hop over to beans. Stay on, and I want to do that so that we can get both old crop corn and beans. Talk about that before we go on to new crop, Jerry. What are you thinking on carryover? Much movement here?
Well, I came in with a cautious approach as we going back to more of the traditional point approach here in the February scenario. I realized that, you know, you could talk about, hey, we're going to turn around and increase exports by 10 or maybe 15 million. But at the same time, I think they could turn around and add 10 or 15 million to imports. Yeah. And bang, zoom, we're right around this 140. If we come in at the 130 level, I don't think that's going to surprise this market. The one thing I don't think that the market's anticipating, some number is going to be below 120. Or even 115 type of scenario, because in the classic sense of it right now, stocks to use were even tighter than that we had back in, I think it was 13 when we were 2.8 at that point. But at the same time, the big psychology is 100. I don't see the USDA, we're going to have all kinds of craziness if people think that's going to go under 100 million. we kind of know the people involved in that, Chip and I do, and I think their approach is always, well, that's just about what we're going to have. If we need to, you think it's going to be rationed more, then you do it. I'm not going to do it, so we'll see how that works out.
Right, right. Now, this 140 number, to be at 140 million bushels at the end of the marketing year, do you think that we need to see a number from USDA at some point that is closer to 100 million bushels on bean carryover just to get that one last jab of demand destruction into the market?
I don't know. That's a real good question because, to be very frank, the market continues to be kind of impressed at this big wall of beans, and it's been delayed, but it's still out there. And that's the one thing it's always us for us out here to think about this. I think someone mentioned in some of the commentary we had like a 5 million metric ton crop coming in from Brazil. Put the two together, there's 7 billion bushels in South America going to be harvested here at the latest, and it hit the world markets is early March. We're at 4.1. That's a big difference here. I don't know. That's a really cricket. I think there will be emotions. There will be issues about Argentina pops around here. I don't know how much above this $15 kind of psychology that's kind of held us at this point is going to happen. If we're going to go and take something that, you know, with issues in South America, we can't, we don't plant the beans in the U.S. for some craziness. Wow.
Right.
Then we've got the infamous, you know, $17-$18 stuff in 2012. But I just don't sense that we're in that particular position right now. And it's kind of been interesting that, you know, since the January report, we just haven't been able to get the beans going because I think everybody's looking out the door and say, it's not here now, but it's going to be coming. And that's a lot of beans, and I don't know if I have to chase this market because I've already got some bought down there. I'll get them.
Okay. All right. Very good. Real quick on the wheat side of thing, anything that we need to be aware of on wheat for old crop?
Well, there's a lot of people anticipating no real change in that because of the exports. I don't know. I threw in an idea that we might see a 20 million decrease in wheat because we just keep stumbling along here, not getting this stuff shipped. And that, I realize that if Russia is going to shut down here in April and May, that we should get some wheat out of back into the U.S. because we don't have that much in Europe. But at the same time, you know, if it didn't change, it wouldn't surprise me. If it went up, you know, 20 million or so, it wouldn't surprise me. At this point, the key thing is what does the U.S. crop going to look like once we get out of dormancy and what's going on? That's going to determine how much old crop we try to use up before we scared of our new crop out here in the U.S.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's look out a little bit further out to the 2021-22 marketing year. Like we said, we got the USDA annual outlook forum coming up the end of later in the month. What do you think? Where do you want to start? We kind of talked about the acres. We already talked about the yield a little bit. Take us down the acreage path. Where are we going to end up here?
Well, I think it has really made some dynamic changes since December. You know, at that point, beans were still flying along. Everybody was looking for a bean export, or bean planting. And our friends at USDA baseline was at 89 million. That was up nearly 6 million. And then, boy, we're going to be up flying along. And corn was, you know, coming. Not much change there. And then all of a sudden, we had this dynamic change in crop size from last year. And then we had the Chinese purchases and that. Now we're all the way to 94 million on U.S. corn. Wow, that's a tough one for me. I'm really in the 92 million, and I might be just a tad high on that. On the bean side, I am at 91 million. Now you total those up, that's 183 million. I think the highest we've had in those two is 181. 183 against 181 in that. And I think that's really as much as we're going to do. Now, I understand, boy, that corn's fantastic. Well, Milo's pretty damn good down there.
Darn right.
Southwest. There's some great, great prices. If I'm going to plant corn in southwest Kansas, and I can have Milo is going to get me more prices and better prices, and I can get a hard cash sale for it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Why am I taking the shot in corn? Now we say, oh, well, we're going to take a shot, and we're going to gain so many more of those acres up there in the plains, and those are all going to go to corn. Well, that's really – if I'm looking at my yield on beans against yield on corn in the Dakotas, and I got prevent planting acres out there, man, those beans look a lot more attractive to me. Now, geez, what about cotton? I just heard – didn't I hear 83 cents?
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Price, I don't know if I'm going to see people in that part of the world decide to put corn in there either, or even the southeast, you know, from there. So there's a lot of situations where these numbers that people want to throw out the door here about how big a plantings we're going to have on corn, and to some extent the oilseed side of things is still pretty strong too. I realize it's maybe not as exciting as it has been in the corn, but I really think that, to me, I feel a lot more putting together the total number of acres are going to be below 2014 in that. Mm-hmm. And then 13 and 12, I think we're over, you know, even a million or two higher on that. But we just can't totally get enough acres to get this all balanced out. That's my expectation.
That's the big deal. That's the big deal that we're looking at in the year ahead. Jerry, my friend, it's always fun. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Always good to talk, and we'll hope to talk this spring sometime.
You betcha. Go Cyclones.
Bye-bye.
Jerry Goodell. Jerry Goodell, Midland Research. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up here in a moment.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Well, I wish I had some shoes on my two bare feet.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Just wrapped up a conversation with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research.
We sure did.
And good conversation. 250 million bushels more on Jerry's 2020-21 corn export estimate. That's kind of a big number. 2.8 billion bushels of corn in his export estimate. I'm not saying that it's not likely. I mean, the pace that we're on, it's very likely. The question becomes what we talked about in the news. And Jerry
made bring that up. Yep.
Jerry made a comment about it in his forward-looking analysis of where we're going to end up and how we're going to end up there. That 2.4 million metric ton number for combined corn and soybean loadings, it can go higher than that, but it feels, if it does, that it's going to be at the expense of wheat for the Gulf loadings. Mm-hmm. Okay. But we need to watch this combined loading total and how much higher we can push it above 2.5. That's an easier number to remember for me, above 2.5 million metric tons on a weekly basis. And if we can, then I think we got a chance. If we struggle to do that on a consistent basis, then it's going to be really difficult.
China eradicates hog diseases of all kinds.
What?
An unlikely scenario, but what does that do to that number?
Oh, well, that keeps it high for a longer period of time.
Because I feel like, remember Ted Seifert laid out his conspiracy theory about all the corn that China's buying is war stocks. They see maybe something coming up ahead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that scenario, it wouldn't matter, you know, what happens with their hog herd. Feed demand might not have that great an impact on it if they're just buying corn for the simple practice of buying corn.
Of having it and having as much of it as they possibly can have of it.
Yes.
You know, that's what that comes down to. It's an interesting thought there as well. And one that I, you know, the way that they've been, the way that China's been rattling their sabers, you can't rule it out. Can't rule it out.
And it doesn't have to be just war either. I mean, they're a major consumer. You know?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, we jumped right into that segment there. The reason that Carrie's taking a week off.
That's right. Yes.
What? Carrie took a week off?
Yes. Yes.
I don't think Carrie's taken a Monday off in like 3 years. I don't know what's going on. I barely know what to do with myself.
Really?
Really?
Well, let's try and think of something.
Well, the good news is Carrie will be back next week.
Okay.
And we will have the update for you. Even though the markets are closed on next Monday, Carrie will still be back and give us
an
update.
Carrie will be here, but we won't. But Carrie will
won't.
Be here.
We'll figure it out. We will figure
it out. Okay, I can live with that.
So I thought I would just take a quick look at the new crop charts just to give you a couple of impressions from what's going on there. Number one, we are 6 days into February, six sessions into February. And this doggone D's corn chart has got two closes under $4.50 and four closes above $4.50. And now we've got a close above $4.55. So we are pulling that average, that spring price average up. And the reason, you know, once you get to the midway point, if you can keep it in this area, it's going to be hard to pull it down because it's an average.
Right.
You know, so, hey, get us to the end of the week, really, right? Get us to the end of the week with this Dease corn contract up around $4.50 or an average for the month at $4.50, and it's going to be really difficult to start to pull it down from there. November 21 bean futures, it's just so impressive to me. We've got the three closes under 1160, three closes above 1160, and today we hopped it up to 1180. I mean, just a really, really nice move that we've got, and the ability to trade above 1150. Haven't had a close in February below 1150, Davis. Again, we're building that case. That makes it easier for me to give that 183.3 million acre total combined between corn and soybeans at least gives it a chance of happening. That, and that's Jerry's number, the 91.2 million acres of soybean plantings, 92.1 million acres of corn planting gets you to 183.3. If we can hold this spring price up, you know, and give them the financial security, I don't know if I'm going to call it all that much incentive, but it is definitely a higher level of security when you can work with numbers like it looks like we might be working with for the spring prices on corn and soybean revenue protection. It's going to feel pretty good. It puts 183 in play. Okay. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook, February 14th through the 18th. The thing that I'm starting to worry about for spring planting is actually getting the ground thawed out.
Yeah.
Ah, come on.
It's just because it's cold. It's just because it's really cold.
February 14th through the 18th has still got the below normal temperatures right over the middle of the country. Highest odds, 80% odds of below normal temperatures over the central and southwest corn production areas. But we've got below normal temperatures over the entire country, really. Above normal precipitation also expected for February 14th through the 18th. So cold, and it's like what we talked about with Michael Clark from BAMWX this morning on the show.
Yeah.
February 16th through the 22nd.
Feels like one of those old-fashioned winters from the good old days, you know?
Yeah, starting to feel that way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the 8 to 14 day, February 16th through the 22nd, below normal temperatures across most of the country and normal to above normal precipitation over the middle part of the country. That, again, is for February 16th through the 22nd. Wow.
I'm down.
Feels like today went really, really fast. Really fast.
It was
fast.
A good day. It was a good day. Good work, buddy.
For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, Kip Eidelberg from AEM. And tomorrow afternoon, Davis and I will have the details. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.